Torontonians?
Okay, we'll discuss it after we turn off the machine. So we're starting a new Sefer this morning, Sefer Bamidbar. And I want to start with a piece of the introduction of the Ramban to Sefer Bamidbar. You know, people make a mistake sometimes and they skip introductions. Introductions sometimes are fascinating. Actually, I had a friend in yeshiva, who was really a superstar, and he spent an entire zman, entire semester in yeshiva, learning introductions of Sfora. That's what he did. But there's a wealth of material in introductions of Sforim. And the Rishonim, of course, someone like the Ramban, like Nachmanides, you're certainly going to see something. And I think this is new. So let's see a little bit. Incidentally, I Xeroxed this. I copied this from there's a new Ramban out in English, Hebrew-English Ramban, and it is a phenomenal investment for those of you who would have more difficult with the straight Hebrew. It's a tremendous work. It was done really beautifully and with instructions as you go along. It's like you're learning with a chavrusa, like you see here. He starts off Sefer Bamidbar Sinai. Now he says Ramban explains the theme of the Book of Numbers. Okay.
What's the name of the book?
So the Ramban, Ramban al Torah, five volumes, Ramban al Torah.
What was wrong with Chavel's?
So let's. Nothing was wrong. Rabbi Chavel's work was a. They use Rabbi Chavel's work, but there are extensive notes, many notes there that didn't exist before in Rabbi Chavel's work. Rabbi Chavel's work was phenomenal, is phenomenal. Okay, so let's see what he says here. Achar Shapir Torah HaKorbanot B'Sefer HaShlishi, after explaining the laws of the sacrifice in the third book of the Torah, that was Vayikra, right? The Torah now begins in this book to arrange the commandments that were issued in the matter of the Tent of Meeting, the Ohel Moed. So now we are introduced to the Ohel Moed, which in itself is unusual. The temporary home of the Shechina, the temporary temple, the Mishkan, and yet it takes up more of the Torah than any other subject matter, right? Which is in itself an interesting point, which we're not going to deal with today, probably. Okay, so now we're going to the Tent of Meeting, the Ohel Moed. The Torah has already warned against the contamination of the sanctuary, right? V'kvar he's here al tumat mikdash v'kodashav ledorot, for all generations. And now, he says, v'ata yagbil et ha-mishkan, now it bounds the tabernacle while it is in the wilderness, just as it bounded Mount Sinai when the glory of God was there. Now, this is the point I want to focus on in a minute. He's making a comparison. Just like at Har Sinai, if you look in the Torah tells us we can't go near the mountain, we have to stay away from the mountain, we make Hagbalah. Well, the 3 days before Shavuot are called the Shloshat Yemei Hagbalah, the 3 days of boundary, when we were at the foot of Har Sinai, but we couldn't come close to Har Sinai. So just like we had at Mount Sinai, Hagbalah, that we had to, we had restrictions, physical restrictions of coming close to the mountain. So too, we have physical restrictions of coming close to the Ohel Moed. You couldn't come near the Ohel Moed, and only the Levium could carry the holy, take apart and put it back together, the holy vessels, the Kelim. And anybody else who did it was Chayav Misa. So it was pretty serious. The question is, why do we compare the sanctity with which we relate to Har Sinai to how we relate to the tabernacle? The tabernacle is temporary, right? How do you compare anything to Har Sinai, right? So let's go on. And he also says, this book deals entirely with temporary commandments that the people were commanded during their stay in the wilderness, and with the miracles that were performed for them, so as to relate to all the great work of Hashem which He did wondrously with them. Now, this is not really true what he's saying, because there are many mitzvot in Sefer Bamidbar that are not temporary. So it really leads me to conclude that the Ramban is really referring to those mitzvot that deal with the tabernacle itself, which was temporary. So let's deal with that question. How do you compare the sanctity with which the way we deal with Har Sinai, that's the way we have to deal with the Ohel Moed, which was temporary. So I think the answer is something that we might have touched upon in the past. I don't recall doing so. But the truth is Har Sinai a permanent feature or not? Where is Har Sinai? We don't know where Har Sinai is. The map that writes Mount Sinai is based on Christian scholars. And it's a guess. It's a guess. And it's not the first place on a map. There have been numerous maps in the last hundreds of years that have placed Har Sinai on different mountains, different places in the Sinai Desert. So the one that we have now is the latest of research that was done a couple of hundred years ago by Christian scholars. But we have no Masorah of where Mount Sinai is, which in itself is a strange thing. We know where, if you get on Highway 1 here in Yerushalayim and just go up, which I do after here, and I go to my next year, I go right to the Kever of Shimon HaTzadik. We know where the Kever of Shimon HaTzadik is. We know where Shmuel HaNavi is buried. We know all kinds of archaeological points of reference in Arzeinu HaKadosha. But we don't know where Har Sinai is. Why is that? Why don't we have a Masorah where Har Sinai is? That's a strange thing, right? Right? V'halo davaru. The answer is because the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us something very central. The physical place where the Torah was given is not as important as what was given on that mountain, right? And this is where we part from other Western religions or Eastern religions. Usually some great moment of inspiration by some great supposed prophet at a certain place, and that place becomes holy forever, right? Well, we don't look at it that way. It's not important, the mountain. It's the Torah that was given there. And in fact, the Ramban himself, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Mitzvot, where he outlines all of the 613 mitzvot. Now, the Rambam is not alone. Many Rishonim, many early rabbis, codify the 613 mitzvot. And there are differences of opinion as to which are the 613 mitzvot. There are minor differences. Some count this, some count... And the Ramban, in his commentary on the Rambam, Nachmanides, in his commentary on Maimonides, sometimes I think it's less confusing to say the Ramban and the Rambam than Nachmanides and Maimonides, okay? So the Ramban, in his commentary on the Rambam's Book of Mitzvahs, at the end has a book of his own. It's called, fascinating title he gives it, Mitzvot Sheshachach HaRav. The Mitzvahs that the Rabbi forgot. It sounds like one of these novels today, right? And the second mitzvah that he writes there that the Rambam forgot is to remember the events on Har Sinai. Now, but you got to read it very carefully. He talks about to remember Har Sinai, not to remember the mountain, but to remember the event that took place on Mount Sinai, the giving of the Torah. That's the point here. Now, I always like to tell the story, true story, about Mark Twain. The Gemara Megillah says, Chachma Bagoyim Tami. Someone tells you there's wisdom by the Jews, believe by the non-Jews there is. So Mark Twain was a very smart man. And Mark Twain, in Mark Twain's Boston, the Boston Globe sponsored a pilgrimage to what was then Palestine to climb Mount Sinai and recite the Ten Commandments on the top of Mount Sinai. Now this obviously was only for the rich and famous, right? You can imagine what passage on a boat would cost and the whole pilgrimage. So he wrote a letter to the Boston Globe and he said that I have a better idea. Instead of spending all that money to travel in a pilgrimage to Palestine and to travel to Mount Sinai and to climb Mount Sinai and to read the Ten Commandments on the top of Mount Sinai, save your money, stay in Boston, and instead of reading them, keep the commandments here in Boston, right? So this is really the point of the Ramban. This is the point why we have no Masorah, no tradition of where Mount Sinai is, because we de-emphasize it. Now it makes sense that we compare the sanctity to which we give the temporary tabernacle to the sanctity with which we attended to the temporary Mount Sinai, because Jewish history, beginning with the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai, was a series and is an ongoing series of temporary homes for the Torah until we reach Eretz Yisrael, until we reach Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. And the first temporary home of Torah was Har Sinai, which, by the way, P.S., was not in Eretz Yisrael, right? The Torah was not given in Eretz Yisrael, right? So, and it was the first temporary home of the Torah. So that's why we don't know where it is. We're not interested. We don't have to know where it is. It's for archaeology. It would be nice to know, maybe, but, you know, we're not going to find anything there that was left by Knesset Yisrael when we received the Torah. We took everything of importance from the mountain, okay? And that's the pshat over here, why the tabernacle is compared to Mount Sinai. Because we have to treat every home of the Torah with that kind of derech eretz. And that's why we have laws in our Shulchan Aruch of Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. Beit HaKnesset is a mikdash ma'at. It's a miniature sanctuary. And there are laws and rules of how to conduct ourselves in a shul, right? Sometimes you go into a shul, you wouldn't know that there are laws of how to relate to a shul, deal with a shul. But there are. And they're very strict laws, by the way. Okay, let's move on to number two. This is from the Emes LeYaakov, from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And Vaydaber Hashem B'Shat, now in the opening pasuk, he spoke to Moshe B'Shana HaShenit, let's say, Tam Me'eretz Mitzrayim Le'mor Se'u Et Rosh, etc. He spoke to them the first day of the second year, in the second year. So he wants to know, and he took a count. He took a census. So we know the famous Rashi, why did he took a count? He just took a count before, because of his chiba, his love for the Jewish people. You know, he's always counting, you know? Like when you go on a trip with your kids, you're always looking, where are they, right? But it's because you love them. You know, is everybody here? But, you know, you love them, so you keep counting them, right? Jews, we count what we care. We don't count money, we count our children, right? So he writes here, Hine ha-minyan hazeh kenira miseder ha-shvatim, shemana et gad acharuvein v'shimon. This is the order of the tribes, the counting of the tribes. Haya b'yichud kedei l'sader et inyan ha-digalim. This particular counting was in order to put the tribes, the flags of Am Yisrael, in order, to set up the Machane Yisrael according to flags. Ulechura tamua, halo tekev kishi yatzu bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim. As soon as we left Mitzrayim, yatzu bnei Yisrael al tzivotam. We left together in our tribes. Kedichtiv, as it says, bnei Yisrael yotzim biyad rama. We went up with a high hand. Vechein v'chamushim bnei Yisrael. We went up armed. Hare shelo yatzu ka'avadim haborchim me'adonem. We walked out pride, komemiyut, Torah says. We walked out proud. We didn't walk out like a horde, a band of Nebuch slaves running away. Ela ka'am chafshi. We left as a free people. V'amai himtinu milesaderet hadegalim shana t'mima. Why did the Rebbeinu Shel command only a year, a full year, before we set up the flags and the tribes in order of the Machane Yisrael, the camp of the Jewish people? V'etma, Tzakashi says, V'alo davaro, it's a question. So he answers, he begins to answer, Elisha be'emet, let's talk about flags, he says. Inyan ha'digalim, he says, what about flags? L'chura hu pirud ha'levavod, if you think about it, a flag is really creates a sense of disunity, you know? Like, you know, in color war camp, so the first thing they do, they divide the camp into two, and each camp takes a flag. So my flag is on this side, your flag is on that side. So there's a competition, there's a competitive spirit, and it's all under the banner of my flag, right? So he says, V'chein, he says, Ki zev vadaish Shekolt Seva Yeshbo Eze Sema Miyuchat. He says the truth is, every flag has its own unique pendant. V'chein Hatziurim Shehayu Al Kol Degel V'Degel. And it's true about the original flags of the Shiftei Yisrael, the tribes of the Jewish people. Each one had a different insignia. Halo Zeh Tzian ki kol shevet v'shevet yesh lo tchuna o she'ifa miyuchedet, because each tribe had its own unique bent, its own unique personality. U'matarat ha'echad shone mi'matarat ha'sheni, the goal of one tribe was not the same as each of the other of the 12 tribes. V'nimtza ki l'chura ha'digalim gormu l'pirun ha'levavot. So the flags could, was a challenge to unity, right? Everybody's pushing their own flag. Ella mikivan shahaya l'kula merkaz echad. But since they all had one central focal point, v'hainu ha'mishkan, the Mishkan was the focal point for all of the Shvatim, and that was right in the middle. V'kulam chonim misaviv l'mishkan, and all of the tribes encamped and circled around the Mishkan. Ein ze gorem l'pirut. So it didn't create a sense of disunity. Ela kol echad omed al mishmarto, amyuchedet. Each tribe stood their ground on their own uniqueness. Ve'ein kan shum pirut, but there was no disunity, right? U'kimo ba'adam, just like a person. V'chi mipnei sha'oznayim nivru lishmoa v'ha'inayim lirot. Just because the eyes are given to hear and the eyes are given to see and the ears are given to hear. V'chi ta'alel da'atcha sh'tiyeh b'neim pirudu machloket. Would you say that therefore there's going to be a machlokes, an argument between the eyes and the ears, right? U'kamo kein b'uma, the same thing with the nation of Israel. Mikivan shekulam meruchazim lenekuda merkazit achat. Since they were all surrounding one central focal point, the Mishkan. Imkein ein chshash pirunu machloket. So there's no suspicion that there will be any disunity and any fighting and any dissension. Now, when was the Mishkan built? It wasn't there until the second year. Ulefichach kol zman shelo hukama Mishkan. As long as the Mishkan was not built and up and ready, v'lo haya adayin merkaz ruchani, and there was no central focal point, az hayita kol ha'uma chativa achat v'degel echad l'kulam. So then, the entire nation of Israel was one cut, one slice, one flag. Ma she'en ken, achar shehukam ha'mishkan, but not after the Mishkan was erected, ki az ein shum chshash l'degalim, then you don't have to worry about giving out flags to each tribe. Ulefichach, therefore, achar shebechodesh harishon b'shana ha'shenit hukam ha'mishkan, since on Rosh Chodesh of the Chodesh harishon of Nisan, in the second year, hukam ha'mishkan, the Mishkan was erected, hitchilu lehitasek b'degalim. Then each tribe was given their flag. Be'echad l'chodesh ha'sheni b'shana ha'sheni v'nachon. Because at that point there was no fear of, at least the Mishkan mitigated against machloket, right? And therefore each tribe could have their own flag, and each tribe could have their unique perspective, their unique personality, their unique responsibility, but each one will work with everybody else because we are all in this together based on the Mishkan. And this is very similar to the brachas that Yaakov gave to each of his children. He called them all together, and he gave each one their bracha in front of everybody else. So each of the Shiftei Ka, each of the Shvatim should recognize, I have something unique, but my brother also has something unique. And that's why Dafke Yaakov gave the brachot in front of all the other Shvatim. And that's why, based on this, that's why the Mishkan was first erected, and then the Degalim. The flags were given out to each of the Shvatim. Okay, let's go to number three. If we're going to be able to get through everything here today, maybe we'll... All right, this is a Hasidic thought. This is from the Shem Mishmul, the Sacher Tshuva Rebbe, and it relates to Shavuos, a little bit of Shavuos. B'shloshet dvarim nitna Torah. The Torah was given with three commodities. Be'esh, fire, b'mayim, water, and b'mibar. And it was given in the desert. Okay, that's the Medrash. What does that mean? What is that all about? Bir advarim, that explanation. Dihine shlemut ha'adam, hi shiyeh shalem man is divided into three parts. And perfection in man means that he has to work on those three parts. Guf, nefesh, v'sechel. His physicality, his body, his intellect, and his emotions. Those are the three parts of a man. And he's going to now discuss in this essay that that relates to guf, the guf, sechel, and lev, and intellect relate to fire, water, and desert. So we need all three of those components to be a complete human being, to accept the Torah, and to live with Torah. That's what he's going to develop here. Ulumatam heim eish mayim u'midbar, fire, water, and desert. Midbar, what's the desert? Hu she'ein lo tziruf el yishuv ha'olam. The desert is completely divorced from society, from the rest of the world. V'romez l'seichel ha'adam. And this hints to the seichel of man, to the head, which is separated from the rest of the body. Shehi ha'neshama she'mishkana b'moach. The brain, the head, is on top. It's separated from the rest of the body. She'ein lo tziruf el ha'guf. It's attached, but it's kind of separated from the rest of the body, right? And the brain is the housing of the intellect, right? So that's what he wants to say. So that's number one, okay? That's midbar is the brain, is right? Now skip the parentheses. Eish, what's fire? Romezet lekochot hanefesh, emotion, fire, passion, right? Mishenichnas belev, when into the heart enters, v'rishpe rishpe eish shal havati. He's quoting a pasuk here, the coals of fire, right? That's our passion, our emotion. That's the fire of our emotion. Mayim rumazim lekochot hachomer. That relates to chomer. Is actual physicality, the goof, the body. Heim chumriyum, kemosha katuv ha-maral. Now he's referring to the maral, but he doesn't bring the maral. What the maral really says is the following. He says there are two things in physicality. There's chomer and surah. There's, you translate chomer, like material. Like you have wood, is chomer. Surah is a chair or a table. So the raw material is chomer. That's wood. The tsura, what you do with it, you make a chair into it, right? So you have a table. In other words, that's the challenge of taking our physicality, which is just simply matter, and doing something meaningful with it. Water is the ultimate chomer. And because water can become the tsura of any, takes the shape of anything that you put it into. So water, which is always a metaphor for Torah, right? Because, and that's the point here, that water is the metaphor here for man's physicality. We should be like water. We should be adaptable. We should be able to adapt to the form, to the matter of the world and create something. Okay, so those are the three items of man: his physicality, mayim, his intellect, his relating to the brain, and midbar, the desert, right? And the third is eish, is fire, which is our passion, our emotion. King eish lefarish mamram zel, he says, we can explain a statement in our oral tradition. It's a Gemara and Chagig in the Talmud. Shatorah kolelet pratit nemru b'sinai, pratot nemru b'sinai, v'nishnu ba'oel moed, v'nishtal shu ba'arvot moav. There are certain things that were taught at Har Sinai, others were taught in the Oel Moed, in the tent, which we just talked about, and others in the Arvot Moed, Moab, in the desert. Now, this is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Last week in Shemitah, Rashi, in Bechukotai, Rashi quoted Rabbi Yishmael's position that everything was given at Har Sinai. But that's not Rabbi Akiva's position. Rabbi Akiva's position is that the Torah was given in three different places. It was given at Har Sinai, it was given in the Oel Moed, and it was given in the Arvot Moed in the desert. Shezeh, so he wants to say again, Shezeh makpil umat shlosha el chelke hadam. This again relates to the three compartments of man, that the Torah was given in order to fulfill human potential in all three areas. Bahar Sinai, the intellect, who neged ha-sechel. Ba'oel moed, it was given in the Oel moed, neged ha-nefesh, makom ha-korbanot. That's where we offer the sacrifices, nefesh tachat nefesh. V'tochu ratzuf ava mibnot Yerushalayim, quoting psukim here, right? It's the passion, Yitzchak, who was ready to give himself over completely in the Akedah, right? V'arvot moed, arvot moav, is, what is that, miloshin? Arva, arava, or areva, mutual responsibility. Arevut. Shehu choshech neged kachot haguf. That a person has to see himself as an arev. He has to give himself over and move away from his physicality and elevate his physicality. Right? V'hakavana sheyishtalmu Yisrael al yedei Torah, that a person has the ability to perfect himself through Torah, beguf, physically, with self-control, v'nefesh, with his emotions, v'sechel, and his intellectual ability, capabilities. Liot kulo kodesh, he can become completely kodesh. V'shiyeh ha-tikun ha-klali nigmar. So this is the challenge of Kabbalat HaTorah. This is the challenge of Shavuot. The ability to, and every time that we have the opportunity to renew ourselves at Shavuos, we have the ability once again to perfect ourselves, at least strive towards perfection in these three areas. Okay, I'm not going to do the rest of this, and let's go on to number four. This is from Rav Schwab. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai. Again, he spoke to him in the desert. Why the desert? And he quotes an oral tradition from the Medrash. B'midbar Rabba, kol mi she'enu oseh atzmo k'midbar, hefker, enu yachol lignot et ha-chachma v'ha-Torah. So he's using a different Medrash, why the Torah was given in the desert. Anybody who doesn't make himself like a midbar, right? A desert. In other words, he's talking about humility, obviously. Right? Doesn't see himself as a great mountain. He sees himself as a desert. Right? Eino yachol liknot chochma. If you don't, you're not. There's no way that you're going to be able to acquire wisdom. Lekach nemar b'midbar Sinai. God spoke to Moshe b'midbar Sinai in the desert. V'nir lefaresh. So he discusses this. Shekol zman shadam chai b'ha'ani shelo. You know, they used to speak about the me generation, right? So whenever a person speaks about me, I, right, az ha'ani chotseitz beino ben kono yitbarach. That I is going to get in the way, that little letter I is going to get in between our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. It's going to restrict our ability to have a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. Aval kesho set atzmo kehefker. But if a person de-eyes, you know, we talk about in Toronto de-icing. If you de-eye yourself, right? Then you remove the mechitza that exists between us and Hashem. Then we can merit wisdom. You know, if I know everything, and nobody can teach me anything, right? If I know everything, you can't teach me anything. But if I say I don't know anything, then I'm open to learn. V'inyan, I have kerut. This means if you learn a lot of Torah, if one has the zchut, the privilege of learning, studying a lot of Torah, lo yachzik tova la'atzma. Don't, so you know, pat yourself on the back. L'kach netzarta, that's what we were created for. V'shelo yitgeya behora'a. Don't be proud and arrogant in your knowledge of Torah. The essential thing is, if you have the ability to be creative in your thinking, in Torah thinking, lo yakpid im dorshim dvarav lifnei atzipur shelo b'shem omro. Be very careful, by the way, he says, to quote other people. Right? Don't plagiarism. So very, you know, we see cases in the paper of famous people, right? They just can't resist. And they're caught in the act today. With the internet, you can't get away with plagiarism anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. But people still try. They still try. But, you know, every Montag and Donnerstag, you know, every Sheni V'Chamishi, you see an article in the paper about some other great person who is caught, you know, plagiarizing. Vim ha'adam. There was just an article last week. I just saw an article last week. It's not important. Vim ha'adam me'sim atzmo k'midbar hefker. But if a person makes himself like a midbar, she'eino choshev shehu bal habayit al ha'chochmato. I'm not the bala boss on my wisdom. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam's Torah. V'zocher shehaya yitaken lo chochma mipiv dat utvuna. Then he'll merit the privilege of acquiring wisdom. Incidentally, you know, you just reminded me with the cell phone going off, talking about the internet, all of the we have seen in the last 150 years, an incomparable advancement in technology and science that never existed before, right? Why is that? Well, you see it in the last 150 years, it just doesn't compare. If you put it on a chart, it's off the charts in terms of the development of technology in the world. So you know the Chafetz Chaim said something about this. He had something to say about this. Because already in the Chafetz Chaim's time, there was a tremendous surge in technology, right? The Chafetz Chaim lived at the beginning of the 20th century, died in the 1930s, right?
33,
right? So he said like this. He said that he compared it to Yetziat Mitzrayim. That in the Rambam, the Rishonim explained, we're supposed to be in Egypt how many years? How many years are we supposed to be in Egypt?
400.
How many years were we in Egypt?
200.
210 years. Why? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam felt that we'll never survive. So he sped up the process of Golos Mitzrayim. He sped up the process. He put 400 years into 210 years in order to save Am Yisrael. So the Chofetz Chaim said that he's doing the same thing now. He's speeding up the process because we just won't survive spiritually, and the Rebbe wants to bring Mashiach. That's the Chofetz Chaim's take on this. Brilliant idea. Also, the Zohar, by the way, our Kabbalists say, teach us, just give this over Lefi Arkenu, I'm just going to quote it without really understanding it, but they say that in the fifth century of the fifth millennium, I think it works out, you know, the sixth millennium is really 5,000, the year 5,000. So in the fifth century of the sixth millennium, which is about 5,500, right, if you work out the math, it comes out to about 1840 something. There will be a tremendous surge in understanding the natural order of the world. And in the 1840s was the Industrial Revolution. The Zohar writes this, right? But that's when the Industrial Revolution started, the invention of the steam engine. And there was that set off a tremendous, the technical surge that we are living through today. You know, all of these gadgets that I need my grandchildren to show me how to work properly, right? Okay, so let's just get back here. So he's talking about making ourselves like a desert, that we know so little, right? Then we'll know a lot. If you say you know a little, you'll know a lot. Ubezem uvan ma shenemar b'pasuk. That's what the Torah says. Ve'etchem yiyu ish ish l'mate ish rosh l'veit avotavu. So he's ve'elu shmot ha'anashim. So here in our parsha, the parsha is outlining the presidents of each tribe, the princes of each tribe, the nasi, however you want to translate it. Umamshicha katuv lahaskir kol echad ve'echad mehem b'shmotehem. And then he calls them by their name. First is anashim, and then he reads their name. Ke'ilu zu ha'pkisha harishona, as if this is the first time that we've been introduced to the nasiim. V'tamua, it's strange. Shahari minyan zeh haya ba'echad l'chodesh hasheni. B'shana shenit, let's say Tam Eretz Mitzrayim. We said this is the second Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year. V'kfar hayu yiduim ha'nesiim b'shem. We already knew their names, right? So why is the Torah repeating it? Shehari shlosha shavuot mikodem, 3 weeks earlier, hayeta chanukat ha'mizbeach. There was the dedication of the mizbeach b'mishkan. V'otam ha'anashim, and the same anashim, the same people, Shenimnu kan, who are mentioned here, hey mayu anasim shehikrivu korbanot b'chanukat ha'mizbeach. They're the same ones that gave the karbonas at the dedication of the mizbeach. Od yesh nadak deik. I want to ask another reason, not only repetition. I have another question. Shekan nikraim anashim. Here they're called people. People. Loshan anashim pshutim. Simple people. Beli shum minui usrara. Without any title. Alaf heyutam otam hanasiim. That being said, these are our nasiim. The Nasi Vashavit, Anashim, we call them Anashim, she krivuas korbanotein, they gave the karbonis for all of their tribe. V'hayelo lomar, v'itchem yiyu hanasiim levet avotam. The Torah should have said, with you are the nasiim of your father's house. V'gam tzarech biur, we also have to understand, she tekev achar pirut shmotehem, after we were given their names, eile kriya eida nasiye matot avotam, roshe alfe Yisrael, the princes, the great leaders of thousands, V'toch kidei dibur, again, nikru shuv anashim. Next pasuk, v'yikach Moshe v'Aaron et ha'anashim ha'ila, took these men. So even when we call them the great nesiim, the great leaders, anashim, what is that all about? So he says a very subtle, the Torah is being very subtle here and telling us a profound lesson. V'hatirutzu, the answer is, shelimdam ha'kadosh baruch hu, God is teaching Klal Yisrael, Sha'afim legabe b'nei Yisrael hem nesiim u'mechubadim. Even if they are in the social strata of Klal Yisrael, they are great princes of high social rank, right? Hari mutal aleihem la'asum et atzmam hefker kemidbar. They have an obligation to make themselves and see themselves not as the great leader, but as a simple person. V'itchem yiyu ish ish lamateh. B'li lihitchashev im srara hakodemet. Not to think about themselves with their rank. Ve'ele shmot ha'anashim. Right? That's why, by the way, one of the reasons why the king has a mitzvah. Every Jew has to write a Sefer Torah. But the king has to have a second Sefer Torah. And he has to carry it with him wherever he goes. To remind him that his whole authority is not because he's someone special. But his whole authority is based on the Torah. Without the Torah, he's just another anashim. Shenivcheru b'torat anashim v'al yedei hanhagazu shesamu atzman hefke kemidbar. If the nasi places himself and sees himself as just another Jew, v'hishlichu me'aleim kol kvod atzmi, and he brushes off all of his own personal kavod, right, usrora and rank, zachula hasrora amitit liot Roshe Alfe Yisrael. Then he deserves to really be Roshe Alfe Yisrael, a leader of thousands, right? Ubevo Moshe v'Aaron limnot et b'nei Yisrael. So when Moshe and Aaron came to count, to do the census, v'yikach Moshe v'Aaron et ha'anashim ha'ela. They took these men, l'lamdeh, to teach them inyan zeh, that they have to see themselves as just like anybody else. Asher nakvu b'shemot. Ukehadgashat Rashi, and Rashi really points this out, b'lishonah zahav, in his golden language, asher nakvu lo kan b'shemot, here with their names. Ki kan daik adafke here, nakvu l'moshe b'shemot hanukan, nashim pshutim. He gave the names again. Why do you mention the names? Just like everybody else, you have a name. I'm not giving your title, your name. You're Reuven, you're this, you're that, you're Shlumiel, whatever your name is. You have a name just like everybody else. Beautiful insight. Okay, we'll quickly just do this last one from the Limurei Nissen, from Rav Nissen Alpert. In outlining, Eile Pekudei Mishpachat HaKohati. So he gives the names of the sons of Levi, the tribe of Levi. And he put them in chronological order. All the other tribes would listed their sons in chronological order, right? Not here. Lama Hukdamu pekude b'nei kahat livnei Gershon, right? Afshe Gershon haya b'chor. Gershon was the oldest son of Levi, but yet he put kahat before Gershon. Lefi she kahat haya mitoanei ha'aron shehu kidem hakatu, right? Whatever. In other words, because he carried the ark. Kahat carried the ark. So even though he was the second son, because he carried the ark, he was mentioned second. So what do you see from this, he says? He says there's two things. He says, Yesh kochot ha-nefesh shebuim betolda. There are certain things that come, it's by, you know, nature versus nurture. There are certain things that come to you naturally. V'yeshnam b'kochot shenoladim la'adam b'hit dam muto ideal. Ideal, right? There are certain things that a person has by nature of birth, but certain things that a person has by aspiration, by his what he did in nurture versus nature, you could say. God over him. V'hu b'vchinat v'esa etchem al kanfei nishar. Mi kocha godel, which is the greatest thing? Yichus? Pedigree? Right? Or what I made of myself, right? Right? Mi shemitchaver atzmo legavoa. Someone who attaches himself to God, to godliness, to avoda. Shemaymit, heavenly tasks. V'az ha'avoda minasato. That avoda carries him. He's carrying the ark. V'zeh b'chlal gam b'mamram. That's what the rabbis say. Ha'aron noseh nosav. The ark carried those who carried it. L'fichach hukdamu b'nei kahat. Because they had a holier calling. What they did was trumped who they were by birth. So in life also, it's not about yichus. It's about what we accomplish, what we accomplish on our own. That's really what counts. Okay, thank you all very much.